grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer.
Almost forgot my own sign that says I'm mute. Hey everybody, how you doing this evening? Chris Jordan here, host of the Dudes and Beer podcast. Got a few younglings ready. America's oldest brewery, now available in Texas. Got a few of those over here ready for the show this evening. Our good friend Dr. Danger is joining us tonight. Dr. Danger is a lifelong daredevil stuntman, has done stunt coordination, all kinds of stuff. Known for one of the best fire shows in the country, as far as live fire stunts, things like that. We will be talking to him about the recent tragedy on set of the movie Rust, the search warrant, everything that has come out so far, what typical protocols are, in the film industry and things like that for, stunts, not just fire and cars, but guns and things like that. So we'll be getting into safety in film, safety on set, and safety with stunts tonight with our good friend Dr. Danger, Dr. Danger Stunts. Please do make sure to stop on by while you're online checking out these stories, checking everything else out. Make sure to stop on by Curious Realm, folks. We are five episodes away from officially becoming Curious Realm. Cannot wait. Because of y'all's hard Googling and asking family members to Google and everything else, we have officially taken over the first page of Google. We are now the top search result. So stop on by and check that out. CuriousRealm.com. It is right now a page-for-page copy of DudesAndBeer.com. Everything except the episodes. So once we start up as Curious Realm, episode one will be our first post, and we'll be doing all kinds of fun stuff there. So while you're online checking that out, do make sure to stop on by and join us on the Curious Realm, formerly Dudes and Beer group on Facebook. That is where you can catch all of the articles that we post, all of the things that we talk about. You can become part of the conversation. That's also where we pull our News of the Week segment. Let's check out some of the headlines that are out there right now out of the Chicago Tribune. Men shot by Rittenhouse can be described as rioters and looters, but not victims, the judge rules at trial. And that spurred a nice conversation in the group. Rust released affidavit reveals more details about fatal shooting incident. That out of Deadline.com. Out of the Washington Times, China launches suspected anti-satellite weapon into space. More Rust news from CNN. Fox News, NASA Administrator Bill Nelson believes we are not alone in the universe. Out of InceptiveMind.com, U.S. Air Force selects Eielson Air Force Base to pilot its first nuclear microreactor. And out of NewsArtNet.com, the art-making robot that was detained on her way to the show at the pyramids because Egyptian custom officials thought that she was a spy. They actively wanted to remove her eyes, folks, because her eyes are cameras. She's a robot. So they thought that she was a spy there to spy on them. Wild stuff. Stop on by. Become a member. Dudes and Beer, or Curious Realm, formerly the Dudes and Beer podcast, is the public group. You can stop on by and check out the page as well. While you're there, stop on by and check out True Him Science. True Him Science is home right here in Austin to some of the best CBD product out there on the market. I have searched high and low when my doctor recommended CBD to me for my anxiety for all my travel work. And lo and behold, the best stuff was right here in my own backyard. Christopher Lynch is a great guy over at True Hemp Science. They use a full spigeric process. For those of you that don't know, that's a process of like using the whole plant, seed, stem, root, leaves, bud, flower, trim, everything. And then once it's used, incinerating it and getting more product out of it then, and then working that down and working it down and working it down until there is nothing left. So extracting as much as they can out of it. Stop on by True Hemp Science today. Check them out. Save $50, or not $50, save 7% off your order of $50 or more with code DUDES7. DUDES7 is your code to save 7% off your order of $50 or more, as well as getting two, count them, two hand-sized cookies or brownies of 25 milligrams each. That website, again, is truehempscience.com. That code is DUDES7. While we're talking about codes and sponsors, before we bring on our good guest tonight, Greg Carpenter, also known as Dr. Danger of Dr. Danger Stunts, let's hear from our good friends at Podcast Cadet.
Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultational workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code DUDES20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website, again, is PodcastCadet.com.
That's right, folks. Stop on by. Check it out, PodcastCadet.com. Don't forget, I am one of the founders of Podcast Cadet. I started that show because I love the format of podcasting, and after years in the world of live production, AV production, as well as live broadcast television and radio, I just wanted to see people that had the right idea be able to do it right. So many people have to go in the Wayback Machine and have to fix things, and it's nice when you can start on the right track. So stop on by, check it out, podcastcadet.com. DUDES20 is your code to save 20% off of your entire cart there. Our guest tonight, former competitor on America's Got Talent, not what we're talking about tonight, but, and he can't really talk about everything that's happened over there, but there was an incident over there. We will be talking tonight about the recent shooting on the set of Rust, the accidental shooting of the director of photography, and more, right after this sweet, sweet clip from Dr. Danger's last appearance on America's Got Talent with his School Bus of Death. Folks,
paramedics are going in to try to cut him off the bus.
It was an amazing appearance with him there. The drama, everything. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Danger. How are you this evening? There he is, triumphantly emerging, and now triumphantly emerging on our screen tonight. How are you doing, my friend?
Christopher Jordan, I am doing amazing. And let me just say really quick, I heard you mention True Hemp Science. I've been beat up a really lot in the last 30 years doing all these stunts.
No.
And CBD is what... It's what gets me day to day getting through it.
Absolutely.
Because, I've got some aches and pains, and the CBD has made a huge difference in my life. I just thought I'd throw that out there for you.
Yeah, absolutely. It helps a lot of people. I know it helps my mother with her aches and pains as well. All kinds of stuff. So I've become a huge proponent of it. It has become like a warm hug in my morning. It's been fantastic. Let's kind of start getting into things. I mean, of course, you had that amazing appearance a few years ago. The reason I shared that was because, they just shared that clip of you again, like 2 weeks ago on social media.
Okay.
You know, every once in a while they'll go through and be like, "Hey, yeah, check out this clip," all that kind of stuff. And I think it was maybe a preview of like things to come, you know, here's a gentleman who's been on before, but man,
their new show is called America's Got Talent Extreme. And so I think they're bringing up some of the past stuff that we've done that was extreme.
Yeah.
I had two separate acts on season 10 of America's Got Talent, and they both made the top 10 year highlights of the show.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, once again, the America's Got Talent Extreme, as we were just showing on screen, has officially suspended production due to the injury of a stuntman on there. And I think so many times people take for granted in their everyday entertainment, Greg, whether it's watching NCIS or whether it's watching a show like that, the fact that there are people like you, people like that director of photography, even on the set of Rust, who put their lives in danger to get the shot, to get the take, you know, to make the stunt happen for that maybe 3 seconds of entertainment on screen.
Well, I don't think that the director of photography for Rust really expected to be putting her life in danger that day when she went to work. But when there's weapons and you know, vehicles, and there's lots of stuff that can could interfere with the shoot and be dangerous.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, granted, even as it's come out in the search warrant that the guns used on set were apparently used for live fire practice or plinking, as it was put in the warrant by the crew, saying that this was like a regular practice for them to go out and do that kind of stuff. And sure it is. But apparently they were using a mix of those pistols and stunt pistols on stage. So, that's where things can get confusing. And, like I've said to so many people about it, like, hey, I've seen people in my industry that have been doing this stuff for years get into the weeds here recently because, like, they forgot that rote memory, like muscle memory, idea of like label your cables, you know? We all took such a long break away from what we were doing because of COVID, that there are some protocols that may have gotten skipped here.
Well, I wonder if that had anything to do with what happened on the set of Rust. What was going on with the weapons offset, basically close to set during or before or after shooting, that should have never happened. That is totally not procedure, and that should have never happened like that. So somebody dropped the ball when they allowed that to happen, whether it was the armorer, the person that's in charge of the weapons. And when it comes to protocol on set,
Well, let's get into that real quick, because as somebody who's done stunt coordination, somebody who's done stunts in film, TV, all that kind of stuff, let's get into what the typical protocols of firearm handling are. Because, of course, like, I'm a firearms owner. Behind the wall over here is my bedroom, and there is some in it. I know the typical handling of a firearm, the fact of prop or not, you treat every firearm as though it's loaded. But what are the typical protocols for using firearms on set like that?
I had the honor of working weapons with a prop master named David Aaron, who had 40 years in the business, and he taught me the proper gun handling protocol. And it should have never been in anyone's hand, but the prop master or whoever was in charge of the weapons, the assistant director should have never picked up the weapon. And if whoever picked it up, it should be handled, it should be cleared in front of everybody so everybody can see that they've gone through the process of looking in each chamber, clearing the barrel. That should happen in full view of everybody, while everybody's aware of it, so that you know that when you're handing off the weapon to the actor, that it is totally safe and clear. They didn't do that on this set, apparently. So there was some violations in procedure and protocol, and ultimately that led to a death. You know, it's not the first time. Weird accidents happen. There are just strange things that happened. When you're on set, there's a lot going on. It's high stress, and everybody's working hard and trying to work fast.
Yeah, and high stress and very fast pace.
And so accidents can happen. So you really have to do everything that you can to do the proper steps and the proper procedures so that this doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's not the first time, but I think it's going to be very significant in the industry as it moves forward and how guns are handled, how weapons are handled. There is somebody that's somehow related to the lady that was killed that has started a petition to stop using real guns completely in the film industry. I think she's got a few thousand people that have signed her petition, maybe like 23,000, which, you know, there's a lot going on in our country, and part of it is that they're trying to take our weapons away. And so to me, it feels there's a little tinge of, is this something that they're using to help drive home that point that they're trying to make, that they need to take our weapons away? And if that's what they are trying to use this for, a platform for their anti-gun position, I have a little bit of a problem with that, because guns don't kill people kill people, and sometimes it's accidentally.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes it is by utter accident that tragedies happen. I don't think that this was any intentionality on anybody's part. They are, of course, exploring deeply the possibility of manslaughter charges. Because it's an accidental death under somebody's supposed careful watch, you know.
Right.
So we'll see what shakes out amongst that. But once again, I think that a lot of people, especially in our industry, period, Dr. Danger, have really kind of, sadly, I think, put some protocols aside in an effort to get things produced as fast as possible right now. Not that things aren't skimped and that hours aren't pushed and things like that on a regular basis in the industry. That's what the whole IATSE strike was just about. You know, well, it's the nature of the business. Yes. B, like, that's what the whole IATSE strike was just about. Like, hey, you can't expect people to work with 4-hour turnarounds between shifts 5 nights a week. Like, eventually somebody will have an accident on the way home, you know. Like, eventually the set is unsafe because the people using jib cameras are operating on no sleep.
Well, the freeway is unsafe too when these people head home to their hotels or to their houses and then to get a few hours of sleep and come back.
Absolutely.
You know, years ago they had several years ago they had a big issue about that in Hollywood, and I thought they had made some new laws to kind of to help with that, but at the end of the day, everybody's got a certain budget to work with and a certain amount of time, and they're trying to cram it all in, and things don't always just go right. But I agree that there should be you know, stuff in place to guard against this stuff, but there's still going to be stuff that happens no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, any time, and anytime you have fire or explosives anywhere near a scene, an accident is prone to happen. You know, like that's just a fact.
Now, you talked about, you know, there possibly being some kind of charges brought against the producers or the
we'll
actor.
See.
In 2014, they were filming a midnight Greg Allman movie called Midnight Rider, which was about, it's a documentary more or less about his life. And Sarah Jones was a camera assistant that was on set that day. And the director said, okay, we're all going to walk out on this train trestle and we're going to get the shot. And if the train comes, we have 60 seconds to get off the tracks. William Hunt was on that, and he said that when they heard the train coming, they all tried to get out of the way, and it barely missed him, but Sarah Jones, 27-year-old camera assistant, she didn't make it off the bridge, and she was killed there on set that day. Randall Miller was the director of the film. He was subsequently taken to court for manslaughter and jailed for 1 year, and the film was abandoned. Now, it's sad about Sarah Jones being killed on set. It's also really sad that a great guy like Greg Allman, who was finally getting his opportunity to leave his mark on film about his life, that was, you know, abandoned and possibly sabotaged by the director or the producers, who thought they could get away with it. They didn't have permission to be on the tracks, and they were being rogue. They basically, it's called stealing shots when you just kind of go out and take what you want and you don't really go through the proper authority. So they were stealing shots that day, and they paid for it, and somebody paid with their life.
Yeah, exactly. You're going out, you're cutting corners, you're doing something guerrilla style, you know, and like you said, 60 seconds to escape. Sarah Jones was not able to in that time, and somebody tragically lost their life because somebody didn't want to take the time and go, that's the shot location, let's contact people and get the permits necessary to do what we need to do, you know, get trains shut off or what have you, you know.
And those are all duties. That's our producer duties. A producer that produces the show, and there's many of them usually on a show, those are the duties of for them to sort out and figure out before it comes to shooting. And yes, the director was the one at the end of the day that really paid the price, but it went far beyond his negligence in order for it to happen.
Well, and that's a very good point. It goes far beyond one person's mere negligence for something like this to happen. And as my wife pointed out earlier, as we were just kind of discussing, because her being an actor and having been in film, she understands these things. I can't say that she's ever been a part of a film that involved actual firearms on stage or anything like that or on set. But it's interesting to see where people instinctively want to point blame. You know, I see a lot of people who are, of course, and hey, like I said, I got no problem with being a fan of 2A. Enjoy your 2A, America. That's what it's there for. Proper and responsible use. And there's a difference between a prop gun and a real gun. Not everybody necessarily knows all that. I would think that maybe Alec Baldwin might, You know, maybe he's taken an actual shooting lesson or two for movies he's been in. But it's the job of numerous people to make sure that the bullets aren't anywhere around it, that real guns aren't anywhere near the scene, you know, that these protocols are followed. And
it's interesting the use of the word prop gun, because most, unless it's made out of rubber, because you're going to fall down with it or you're going to hit somebody in the head with it, most all the guns are real guns. Now, some may have been rendered inoperable, but in order for a weapon that like a 9mm, in order for that to recycle the rounds, they put a plug in the end of the barrel, which sizes down the hole at the end, which gives it back pressure, since the bullet's not actually in the barrel to create back pressure. And so that's a real weapon.
Yeah.
On a revolver, the thing with the revolver is, from the view of the camera, if you're looking at the gun, you can see if there's bullets in those chambers in the revolver part. You can see the bullets in there. So they have like little fake tips that they can put in the end. Now, so that you can see that there's a bullet in there, even if there's not. But if one of those stays in there to appear like it's fully loaded, even though it's not, if you put a blank behind that, it will still fire that piece out of the end that's
right,
giving it the appearance that it's loaded.
And can be at terminal velocity, as was sadly found out in the 1993 production of The Crow. That is exactly what happened. You know, it was the fact of, because yeah, like you said, from the camera's point of view, hey, you can use like actual firing blanks that are just nothing but a primer, and that'll be enough to make the blowback happen on a cycling pistol, you know, with the smaller barrel, like you were saying. But if you're using a revolver, it's a little bit hard to make that empty cartridge look real.
Exactly,
as it's in the actual
barrel
looking towards you. And sadly, that was the case in the issue with The Crow and Brandon Lee's death. We had a listener who popped in, Chris Thompson. I actually doubt that Baldwin has taken a safety class. If he had, he would have cleared the gun himself. True.
True.
I also just posit the fact of when the armor or somebody else hands you the pistol and says cold pistol, you know, yeah, you're trained as a firearm user to use it yourself, to check it yourself. However, if it's a prop gun, it may be set up for only that one shot, and taking it out of cycle or doing anything like that may actually ruin the shot that you're trying to get.
Chris,
go ahead.
How do you feel about the fact that just hours before, the crew walked off set with different concerns, including one of gun safety on the set? And
yes,
was the armorer, was she one of the crew that walked off the set, or was it just the camera crew?
I'm pretty sure it was just the camera crew. I know that there have been articles. I posted one on the Dudes and Beer group, actually, that was talking about the armorer being the daughter of one of the best armorers in the business ever. And her actively saying on a podcast right after she got this job that she wasn't sure if she was ready yet. And I don't know how that shakes out necessarily. I mean, it's one of those, hey, were you ready the first time that somebody gave you a match and said, okay, now we're going to set you on fire? You know, like, were you ready for that moment? You know, like, we're all going to jump off the cliff at some point. Are you actively ready for that is the question. You know?
You can never be ready for that. Not really.
Yeah. You know, it's like, are you ready for the first time that the director says action, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, like, she's got to have her day as a master armorer at some point, right? The question that comes to bear now is this all on her? I don't know that she was one of the people that walked, but...
Well, she should have been the one that handed the gun to the actor and cleared it in front of everybody on the set. So how did it get past her on the cart with a bullet still in it? And how did the director, why did the assistant director, why did the assistant director pick it up and hand it to the actor? Now, we gotta assume that it was somewhat chaotic, because when your crew walks off set, that's a big disruption in a lot of ways. Not only does it going to stop or slow down production, but now everybody's thinking about what just happened. So where was the armor? Where was the armor? Why wasn't she by the cart? She should have been by the cart with the weapons on it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, Chris's follow-up question was, his question was, why were there any live rounds on set at all?
There shouldn't have been.
There shouldn't have been. You're right.
The armor didn't do her job, so maybe she was serious. Maybe she was, when she said she wasn't ready for it, maybe she wasn't quite ready for it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean...
You can't blame her for taking the job. I mean, you got to jump in with both feet and you got to do it.
Yeah, it's not a comfortable position for anybody to be in. It's not a comfortable job for anybody to have, and it really does take a lifetime of learning to be able to do it and do it properly. And nobody's saying that she didn't do it properly. Hey, anybody could have brought rounds to set it to put like a set dresser could have brought them, you know, and then they just got swooped up with everything as they cleaned up set one day and it ended up with the prop bullets, you know,
when the weapons are on set, they should be locked up unless they're in the armorer's hands or in the actor's hands.
Yeah.
They shouldn't really be in anybody else's hands.
Unless they are in active use or maintenance. Absolutely. And, it's a common thing. Like you said, the industry works, even though it takes days sometimes to get a shot. You know, you take two or three takes, you spend all day setting things up. The industry works fast. And even lately, like I said, people's rote habits in an industry I've seen lack, you know, and these are people that have done things for years. They know to label cables, you know, but why didn't you label your cables? Well, you just took a shortcut because it's one of those like, I just forgot that reflex action. You know, I spent a year and a half not labeling every cable that I hooked up at home. You know, I wasn't out labeling cables on the job site every day. Were you out practicing as a master armorer in the film industry? Were you out practicing your tradecraft every day and putting those protocols to test and use, you know? The answer is maybe. I don't know. But that is definitely something to be considered. You know, how lapsed was everybody in that? Because of just not necessarily the laxness on set, but the lack of rigor due to attempted speed of production in our current production environment. You know?
You know, I hope that when this all gets sorted out, that they figure out what did happen, where they dropped the ball. I don't wish anybody any harm from this. I mean, obviously there's somebody killed and somebody else hurt.
Yes.
And that's really sad. I hope that we can figure out what happened, and if somebody made a terrible mistake, you know, I mean, what do you think that? Do you think they should be prosecuted?
What
do you think, Chris?
I honestly think, and here's where I come down on it. Same way I told my wife earlier today. I do not see it beyond the realm of possibility. The Alec Baldwin, other producers, things like that, other people directly involved may be involved in some involuntary manslaughter charges. No different than, you know, what any celebrity would suffer, like what Tommy Lee suffered whenever he hit the person going 100 miles an hour drunk off his rocker. You know, he spent 6 months inside and then a year in some hard rehab and doing some community service. But he has a manslaughter charge with him now, you know, and if they can find the fact that negligence on set, negligence to follow protocol, negligence to follow safety on set or safety protocols led to this, then yeah, you've got some culpability there. Whether you're the one that said, let's hire cheaper people and just get the job done, and that's how it ended up happening, what have you, you've got some manslaughter charges ahead of you, most definitely. And I think that that's the only just thing that should happen. Should anybody have to have their life ruined over it and go to prison or anything like that? No, I do not think so, because nobody had any malice of intent here. Nobody, and granted, this is to even dispel those of you out there who are questioning the David Hall conspiracy. Dave Hall, the assistant director, I heard from numerous people via text and things like that as I put this out, getting ready for this episode, that like, oh, you know, he was the same director as on The Crow. He was the same director as on The Crow, you know. And as I looked things up, he was actually the assistant director on the third Crow movie. He was on The Matrix Reloaded, which, hey, if you're on a Matrix movie, I'm pretty sure that you've dealt with some firearms on set. You know, they may have been in a green screen room, but the guns were there. but yeah, he was actually it was The Crow Salvation, which I believe is the third or second movie, the sequel in 1994, that claimed Brandon Lee's life. So yeah, we'll see what shakes out, but I don't think that, that there's any great serial killer kind of conspiracy where it's like, ah, maybe he's loading weapons and, you know, waiting 20 years in between victims.
Well, so here's, it seemed to me that everybody was really quick to throw the assistant director under the bus.
Yes.
And, that things aren't always what they appear to be. And so, my first thought is, at first I'm like, well, this guy, you know, it sounds like a bad guy, but you know what? Maybe he's the fall guy. Maybe he's the first guy that they can point at. Maybe he's just an obvious character that can assume this responsibility. And maybe he's not a bad guy, because right now everybody's trashing him online. And so maybe, I think we need to give him the benefit of the doubt, just like we're going to give the armor and Alex the benefit of the doubt. And I hope that from whatever's learned from this, when they finally get to the bottom of it, that it helps remind people that there are strict industry standards and protocols that have to be followed. And when you're lax on the set, maybe you get away with it a bunch of times, but one day you don't. I used to wear a certain piece of safety gear that one night I just didn't put it on in the chaos of doing live shows. Mm. And it didn't affect me that night. But 6 months later, when I had a terrible accident that I got hurt real bad, then I realized I wasn't wearing that piece of equipment. Mm. And I haven't been wearing it for 6 months. So at some point, I was lax. I let my guard down. I let that slip. And once I let it slip, it became the muscle memory of not putting it on.
That's
instead
right.
of the opposite.
That's right. It no longer became part of your get to it ritual, you know, and it
that's right.
Like I said, it's just that kind of slip of mentality. Just that kind of slip of muscle memory is all it takes. That's all it takes.
Right.
Ask anybody that's a welder in a chemical plant. All that kind of stuff. Like, there are safety protocols that happen there too, but hey, sometimes things just happen. And I think that sadly, this is probably one of those cases. Chris Thompson has replied, there will be at least civil cases. And yes, like I said, I truly believe that will be the case. That will more than likely be what we see as civil cases come about from family members, especially the more it comes out that people walked the set as was happening and on a lot of IATSE sets, you know. There were a lot of IATSE sets and a lot of IATSE job sites where they were walking off in the industry because the working conditions were not up to snuff. And once again, even 4 hours of sleep a row in numerous nights in a row, will make you less aware of those things. It'll make you, slower to act. It'll slow down reflexes. It'll make you lapse of mind. And another one of our listeners chimed in. I find it interesting that staunchy anti-gun liberals, that a staunchy anti-gun liberal killed someone. And now no, the one thing I don't hear is the liberals blaming the gun. Everyone is now trying to find a human to blame. Which is what you were saying earlier, Dr. Danger, that despite anything, it's not the inanimate object, it's the actions of a human wielding it. Could be a hammer. I remember a few years ago we covered a stabbing on campus at Houston Community College where a kid took out three people with his crafting knife, like his X-Acto knife, and then two people with his protractor. It was like, wow. Protractor, man, like you got to get rid of geometry now, you know, no more angles and round, no more radiuses. You got to get rid of the protractors. So yeah, this kid basically like used his art kit to take three people down and send two people to the hospital, you know.
He's probably got a future with the CIA.
yeah, exactly. But all joking aside, the industry that you are in is an on the daily dangerous industry. I know we've had the conversation before about the death of Spanky Spangler and how
Spanky Spangler's brother-in-law.
Yeah.
Spanky Spangler was his brother-in-law.
Yes.
Right. So what happened there was they were doing a mid-air head-on collision. Spanky Spangler's in one car, his brother-in-law Randy is in the other car, and so both cars hit ramps as they're moving towards each other. They have a collision in midair. They had done it several times, and it worked great. This time, one of the cars' speed is a little bit off, and one car gets into the roof of the other car, and Randy was killed. They both signed up to do it. They both signed up to get in those cars that day and do that. Accidents happen.
Carol Suchik,
you know,
is the gentleman I'm thinking of that I witnessed in 1985. He was doing a barrel dive. He was known for being one of the people that went over Niagara Falls in a barrel, all that kind of stuff, and actively went over. Was dropping from the roof of the Astrodome into a swimming pool and fell and hit the side of the barrel on the side of the pool. And I remember them hauling him off to the hospital and hearing on the news when I got home that he had died. And like, I was like 10 years old there watching that. And that was probably my first time. I'd been to, I don't know how many destruction derbies and stunt shows and things like that, Greg, in my life. And it wasn't until then that's a young moment to have that realization of like, wow, that guy died because of that. You know,
we're trying to entertain people. We're trying to entertain people. And it's gotten harder and harder to do that with everything you see on TV and CGI and computer stuff. You know, and so when you're doing live stuff, you're trying to entertain the people, and you got to do your best to take it out to the edge, but you don't want to my biggest fear is not being dead. It's being dead in front of a bunch of kids that are going to be touched by that and live with that for a long time. Because what I do to myself. But if I'm in a live show and that happens to me, then I've just somehow really stepped across the line where I didn't want to go, even though I know that I'm doing something that could take my life doing it. I surely don't want to take my own life with a stunt, which is, they're all stupid, really. They're all, but you go out there because people want to see stupid. So you go out there and you give it to them. But I've been blessed to be able to entertain for 32 years. And I might've been carted off in an ambulance or a helicopter a time or two. I've always been able to come back and say, here I am. I'm good. You know, I believe in God. I believe in doing the right thing. Somehow I've managed to make my way through this job title, this career for as long as I have, and I'm still standing. And so, I mean, and you know, I think there's a lot to be said in having faith in what you do, and I have, and I've been lucky, and it's by God's grace that I haven't had to traumatize people more than I already have doing what I do. So I'm really grateful for that.
Well, and you know, like you said, entertaining as long as you have and doing the stunts as long as you have, even though they are death defying, you take every precaution possible from the proper rigging of the vehicle that you use, be it a bus or car, what have you, for your stunts to everything that you use fire-wise, all that kind of stuff. So how do you, I guess, manage doing these things in front of live audiences? Because your stunts are, as opposed to a lot of other stunts, you know, be it a magician on stage, things like that, that still involve stunt work, yours are involving a lot of explosion and cars flying through the air, buses flying through the air, you know, things like that. So how is it that you guys go through safety precautions and get ready for even your live stunt shows? Because just before COVID happened and everything, you were back out on the road with your live stunt show and with a crew and doing spots all over the country again, you know, like a lot of people don't realize that there are people like you that are out there making their living doing this every day. They're not just like working for a month or two as a stunt person on a movie set, you know, but they're out there doing the same thing that they do on a movie set, but every single day. How do you keep it safe? How do you keep it safe to be able to do, as we can see here in this video, no further away than 60 to 100 feet from a live audience?
Well, so since you brought up that the bus crash, let's talk about America's Got Talent for a moment, because it kind of comes into play with the other topic that we've been talking about with the Goodwin accident on the America's Got Talent Extreme set. What I learned from working with America's Got Talent in 2015 was they have such a strict protocol for everything. They have top of the line stuntmen working with you hand in hand that are watching you, that are questioning everything that you do, and pyrotechnicians that are there watching you, questioning you. And if they see you slipping up, they're not going to let you go any further. So that's a top notch production, and they spend millions of dollars to build their show and to make it as safe as possible. But everybody's pushing the envelope, and you can only take somebody at their word that they could pull off their stunt. And still, even then, something can happen. There's slight mistakes. It looked like Goodwin. It looked like when he released the cable that was going to drop him before the cars hit him, hit together and blew up. It looks like somehow when he released himself from the cable that was holding him, it popped him up in the air a little bit. And he was about 1 or 2 seconds from falling between them. He should have just dropped down. But what was it that happened that kind of popped him back up in the air? So even with all that strict safety and all that, everybody watching and analyzing it, something still happened. So now when you go on, a weekend live set, like a racetrack or a monster truck show, you're showing up in a place that maybe you worked at in the past, but you're showing up there like a couple of days before the stunt, and you're just seeing the lay of the land, and you're getting just now seeing the cars that you're going to use, and seeing who you're going to work with. And it's absolute chaos. And so all of the things that I would like to say that I do on a somewhat of a regimented basis of being safe as I build my stunt, I can't say that it always works out that way, because sometimes the chaos is just freaking electric. And so if the cars are not running, or there's setup problems, or the fire marshal's always going to get in there. And so you're solving all these problems right up into showtime.
Yeah.
And there's been so many times when I just had to do what I came to do, and maybe I didn't have all of my safety stuff completely in line because I ran out of time. And the thing about doing a live show is, when it's time for you to go on, that's what they pay you for, is to be ready when it's time. If you're a stunt guy on a movie set, on a film set, they can hold the role. Everybody can take a break while you get your shit together. They can shoot a take two.
Yeah.
So the difference between doing what I do on a live basis and doing what they do on a film set is really a lot different. So when I'm working live shows, unless it's for somebody that's at the top of their game, like America's Got Talent, I'm out there on my own most of the time, and I'm trying to cover all the bases. And you know what? Sometimes in the chaos and the shuffle of getting the show together, sometimes things do get overlooked.
Yeah, so, they do.
I'm not standing here still talking to you because I'm that good. I've just been that lucky.
I was just about to say, you're not that good. You're just, God enjoys your entertainment that much. You know, that's what I tell people all the time is, believe me, man, I have had my, I've heard your close calls right here on this show, and I've heard beyond that in private conversations, so, man. So,
Do you know how I learned what I know about doing stunts on live shows?
Doing it wrong the first time?
By doing it wrong. So every time I did it wrong, I got taught a lesson. And sometimes you learn a lesson from something you don't even think it's, I'm going to do it just like before, but I'm going to change this one little thing. And you don't know what that one little thing is going to do till you change it.
Yeah.
And then you're like, whoa, I didn't see that coming. So, I've been lucky enough to still be here talking about it with you, and it's not because I'm that good. So what I do is I use the cookie cutter approach, and I just try to do everything the same every week, every show. I think there's always going to be different stuff, different cars, different layout, different tracks. And so, I just try to just imitate the thing I did before that I did right, and not do different things in the middle of that. I just try to do a cookie cutter. Same thing this week as next week as next week as next week.
Yeah.
The problem that we had when we had our television show on History Channel called American Daredevils, the problem that we ran into there was every week the producers wanted to see us do something different. And there's not 16 different stunts that I could do on a weekly basis.
No.
That, there's not 16 different episodes of. So I go out there because what they saw this week in Texas, they're going to see, the people in Oklahoma haven't seen it. So next week I just go to do the same thing. And that's one of my biggest, I'd say that's one of my biggest safety procedures, is to do it like I did it before when I did it right.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You just repeat success.
Yes.
There was eventually a failure, which I think is the real lesson to all the kids at home. And before we let you go here in just a minute, that's what I want to get into, because there's a lot of kids out there like, hey, man, I got into what I do and I got into live theater because I loved special effects makeup. I loved makeup. That got me into doing makeup for theater. That got me into building sets, which got me into doing lighting and eventually led to sound and sound design. And I was on my path. It can lead to so many things. My wife actually blames you for my child crawling out of his crib. He had never done it until the day after you were here in the studio. She was like, I think him talking about all that just gave him ideas. The next day, like, we woke up with him out of bed. First time ever that he'd crawled out and found to, like, climb his way out. Yeah. Exactly.
He was looking for a lighter.
Looking for a fork to stick in the socket or something, you know. But she was like, that Dr. Danger. What's your advice for all those independent movie makers out there, all those people out there making independent film, trying to do things on a shoestring, but trying to keep it safe? And what's your advice to kids that see you out at the racetrack or something like that on a Saturday night in Spokane? And just want to run around on fire.
You know, some kids, you just can't tell them nothing because that's how I started.
Yeah.
And so, I do try to, you know what I tell kids? I tell them, God is real because Evel Knievel told me so. And this stuff that I'm doing, I'm only doing it because I'm really good at it and it can kill you. That's what I tell kids. What I would tell independent filmmakers and people out there trying to do stuff on a budget, do as much as you can. If you're trying to do some stunts, find some local stunt guys that maybe can pull it off. You know, look at their reels and see if they actually have the skills. When you're making these low budget films, you don't always have the money to pay people, but there are people out there that are working on their reels that have some experience that are just looking for a chance to do it. And I would tell them to look at the other productions and see what's happening and where they're making mistakes and try not to make those same mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, safety first, always. Safety first, always. I try to tell people, even the guys that I put out on crew and everything else, hey, man, if you don't feel safe doing what you're doing, you feel free to tell your lead. And you feel free to tell them right out, like, you're not going to do it because you don't feel safe. And I'll have your back. You know, I don't want people working unsafe. I don't want our industry existing because people are cutting corners. And if you remember, all of about a year ago, there was the case and like videos surfaced from the set of Tom Cruise, quote, losing it on set, you know, to his cast and crew about not taking COVID protocols seriously and things like that. And what he was saying was real. Like, hey, anything he's attached to, he's producing, you know, like he's the producer.
And there's millions of dollars tied up in insurance companies involved. Yeah. And if all those guys want to keep working, whether they like it or not, they kind of have to get with that certain program.
That's it.
I don't agree with it. But I tell you, when I'm on set, if they tell me to wear a mask, I wear a mask.
That's it. That's it. And that's what he was saying was like, hey, I'm trying to help get an industry up and moving here again. And you guys are joking around like this isn't something serious. If you're not going to obey that rule, you need to get off my set. You know?
Absolutely.
And I think that not enough workers are ready to do that for themselves. Which was obviously the case. Like I said, I don't think it was anybody in the armament crew. Pretty sure it was all cameramen, grips, gaffers, things like that, that walked off because of the crazy hours. But those are the people normally working those crazy, insane hours, you know? So we'll see as more of this develops. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come on. I know that you are busy preparing a whole new show, busy doing all kinds of stuff right now. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on, Dr. Danger. Tell everybody where they can go to follow you, to keep up with the latest, where they can go to find you on YouTube, all that kind of good stuff, my friend.
On Vimeo, I'm Dr. Danger Stents. On YouTube, I'm Dr. Danger Stents. On Facebook, I'm Gregory Dr. Danger Carpenter. And we have a Dr. Danger Stents page.
All right. Well, there you have it. Dr. Danger, thank you so much, man. Thank you so much for everything you do to enjoyingly entertain families and children across the nation. Thank you for doing everything that you do in the world of trying to keep things safe and real in the industry. So appreciate you taking the time to come on. Hold the line real quick while we close things out. While you're on checking out all of the great work of Dr. Danger and the articles that we were talking about and everything tonight, make sure to stop on by, folks, to the Dudes and Beer podcast. That is where you can check out all of the episodes. Make sure to stop on by Curious Realm, CuriousRealm.com. Just Google it. You don't have to visit it. Just Google it. Tell your family to do it. Tell them. Insist. Tell them they get no Christmas present if they don't. Until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And remember, if you can't be good at it. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.